It's back. It's the Bet the Board NFL podcast, so to speak. A little bit different for us, Payne, going on a Wednesday with a holiday edition. Apologize to the listeners and the loyal listeners at that who clamored for a Monday version, and unfortunately we weren't able to provide it for them.
Hump day, baby. Hump day.
And, of course, we'll get to all three of the Thanksgiving Day games in great detail at the end of the podcast, but before we get there, let's introduce the other man on the end of the line, that of Payne Insider. You can follow him on Twitter there or see his great work at PayneInsider.com. I'm Todd Furman. You can find my work at ToddsTake.com or follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman, F-U-H-R-M-A-N. And Payne, like we always do, let's start with the Sunday card. We'll get to the Thursday stuff at the end, and a couple of good questions came in, some football-related, some otherwise, as we approach this holiday season.
Yeah, it should be interesting. Some of the questions came in. There was one really good one. I know we had missed it previously, but it's definitely worth exploring. And then a couple of the games that we'll talk about this past Sunday, we'll get into that in great detail. And then we'll move forward. Everyone wants to know about the Thursday contests. And then we'll break down some of the big Sunday games as well.
Yeah, let's talk about what we saw unfold for the week that was in the NFL. Some surprising results when you look at Oakland getting their first win on Thursday night against Kansas City. Not really a surprise to the professionals that came in on the dog there, catching 7.5. You look at Baltimore going down to New Orleans, setting the Saints on their first three-game home losing streak since the late 90s. Anything else really jump off the page for you as far as good surprises or things that were a bit troubling as we get into the stretch drive of the NFL regular season?
Well, the two aforementioned games that you nailed, I think it wasn't too shocking for us. Professionals were on both those sides with the Ravens and the Raiders, so that wasn't too shocking. A couple of the games that we did see steam upwards were the Texans going from almost a pick to three. We did see some buyback on the Bengals, plus three from some groups, but just a really, really poor effort from the Texans with such a significant move. So that was pretty surprising to me. Mallett, you hate to bag on him, obviously he's got the pectoral injury, so maybe that was the cause for some of his issues, but he was just terrific, and we've had this conversation regarding him and in terms of what he can do on the football field now that there's some film on him. Unfortunately, he won't be able to do some things moving forward, and that'll be the big question with the Texans. Where do they go from here? Do they bring back Fitzpatrick? Do they go young? Now there's rumors of Thad Lewis potentially in the mix. So the Texans was a weird result for me based on where money came into the market.
Yeah, I was going to say, and we talked about weird results on the money came into the market. I think Tampa Bay falls into that category as well. You look at the Bucs, who took a 10-0 lead into the half against the Bears, a game that was bet from +6 down to +4 early Sunday morning. The Bucs dominate every facet of the box score except the all-important turnover category, allowing the Bears to score 21 straight points in the third quarter, highlighted by two touchdown drives that covered a combined, 28 yards, five plays, 28 yards for those two touchdown drives in a span of just less than 2 minutes. When you talk about that, a little bit of a misleading box score. Another game that I think was a little bit interesting was Josh Gordon. Were you surprised at all by how much he was used and how big a role he played in Cleveland's game plan after serving out that 10-game suspension?
No, I wasn't at all, honestly. We talked about this in the previous podcast, and, you know, he came in great shape. It wasn't like he was loafing around doing nothing football-related. We saw a similar situation with him in years past where he was suspended. First game back last year, has 19 targets. So it wasn't shocking to me how involved he was into the game plan. Even a guy like that, just put him out in the field, you're going to have to get safety help, and it'll improve the run game. And we saw that with West and Crowell on Sunday. So not surprised at all in that category. We talked about the Tampa Bay-Chicago game. Really, the Bears, one good drive the entire game. It was out of the half. They finally eclipsed 200 total yards for the game with about a minute to go as they were trying to run up the clock. And turnovers are killer, and the type of turnovers they had were killer. Two in your own red zone, essentially setting the Bears up right there in the red zone. A Vincent Jackson fumble in the Chicago red zone. And that was one of the crazier turnovers to me. I think it probably had to go with whatever was called on the field. But when you see both teams and Brandon Marshall, they do a close-up of him, taking his helmet off, going back to the sideline, and pointing to his elbow as if he thought Vincent Jackson was down. It was interesting to see how that call turned out. So that was a tough beat for those who had the Buccaneers. If you had the Buccaneers, that was the professional side. It was the right side of the game. Unfortunately, it doesn't always turn out the right way.
And I think you talk about another bad beat actually occurred in the late game. The St. Louis-San Diego game, there were some differing opinions as far as the total was concerned. We saw a couple of groups jockeying to go over 43, others taking under 44. Two teams combined for less than 500 yards, 492 yards to be exact. The Rams, all of 210 yards of offense, yet a game that was 10-6 at the half, you see blow up with 35 second-half points, maybe creating some value on Chargers totals moving forward, or particularly on a side, what a game that we'll get to shortly. Any other things that really jumped off, Payne, that you thought we could learn from last week and that'll be easily applicable to how we break down this weekend's card?
Well, you know, to me it's tough, and we talk about it a lot of times about each game being its own entity, and there was some sharp money on the Jets. There was also some sharp money on Buffalo on game day. So when you read some of the quotes, and I know you mentioned one by Calvin Pace about how he was very upset that this game wasn't played on Sunday so the game could just get over quicker. That's tough to see when you read quotes like that, and you should be doing your reading. When you see a quote like that, it's really tough to imagine how professionals could be on the Jets, but I have a sneaky suspicion we might see some Jets love from the professionals Monday against the Dolphins.
I like that tease, and of course, as we do each and every Monday when we actually record our Monday edition of the podcast, we'll break down that Monday night game in detail. We may have to find a fill-in host because, you know, I refuse to address the Jets by name for the better portion of the season. So knowing that they're in the standalone game against those Dolphins could put me in a bit of a quandary, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. I guess, Payne, from taking some of the stuff that we saw last weekend and applying it towards this week's games, not going to have a chance to go through every game on the card. Of course, we'll cover the three Thursday games, though, knowing that those will generate plenty of attention, along with the Sunday nighter. But let's start with the Baltimore Ravens playing host to the San Diego Chargers, a game that opened 5.5, total of 46. Baltimore, a very impressive road win, as you alluded to, the side of the professionals. The Chargers traveling across the country, still kind of struggling to find an identity after they were a covering machine early in the season without that signature win over the last handful of weeks.
Yeah, this is pretty tough, and you get a Baltimore team, they just play very well at home. Flacco, the reason, he's just a much better quarterback at home for whatever reason that is. But I think you do get some value here with San Diego, covering machine early. Now the market seems to hate them. We even saw last week where the look-ahead line was -7 on the game. We saw some resistance, went down to as low as 4. We did see some professionals buy San Diego at that point, but you know, this seems like a good entry point on San Diego. This will be huge in determining the wild card race. So when you can get 6 points in your back pocket, which will have, you know, a Super Bowl-like atmosphere, I think, for this game, where both teams will be entrenched and it'll be a full go, I think you probably look towards the points here with San Diego.
Yeah, and with the look-ahead line on this game, the Ravens were listed as 3.5-point favorites coming into weekend's results. I know you and I were trading tight, almost kicking ourselves when it was 27-17 San Diego, thinking we'd let a glorious opportunity to lay the points with the Chargers against a much maligned Rams team slip through our fingers. And I know we like to cover some of the bigger games, but wanted to get your thoughts on this Houston-Tennessee game. You talked about the change of quarterback that's coming for the Texans, maybe a brief snippet or two of how we handicap the Titans, and then we'll get back into the meat and potatoes, so to speak, of the other marquee matchups on Sunday.
Yeah, this is, you know, for me, when you look at this, I like what I've seen from Mettenberger. He's got potential. He can get you some points. He can move the ball down the field. Bishop Sankey being a little more involved now in the offense, which I think is beneficial. But when you talk about this Houston team, what are they going to do offensively moving forward? For me, they're just two games out. You have another game with the Colts. You got 4 more division games. I don't think you should be throwing the season away now and going to a guy like Tom Savage. I think it's a little too early for that. But then the new name in the mix is Ben Thad Lewis. I don't think he's very good, but he showed up in the clutch last year in 2 virtual must-win games for the Bills, and he delivered W. So it'll be interesting to see where they go from here. I think we'll see professional money on the under in this game, but I think you also probably run and grab the points with Tennessee now. I know 7s have disappeared from the market. There are a few 6.5s out there, and if you can find a few of those lone 7s, Tennessee's probably the way to go here.
Do you think the number continues to trend down once Houston announces a starter, or is it safe to assume that the market already has some of that uncertainty built into the current price?
You know, I think right now if you're going to get Fitzpatrick named the starter, I think you're right where you should be at that 6.5, 7. So it's not a bad point to invest. If you get named Thad Lewis or, God forbid, Tom Savage, this number I think will continue to drop. You know, Tom Savage has the big arm, but he's not a quarterback. We saw that at Pittsburgh. It'll be interesting to see how he's developed, learning the new system, learning the NFL game behind the scenes, you know, through 12 weeks of the season. So I think it's just a little too early for Tom Savage, but if he's named the starter, I think you have a golden ticket if you're able to grab Tennessee plus 7 or even 6.5.
And we've also seen some movement on the total, starting to see some 42.5s pop on this game. Imagine you would see that total continue to trend down, especially if Houston was able to get the services of Arian Foster back to lean heavily on their workhorse back, maybe shorten the game for either of the young quarterbacks, Thad Lewis or Tom Savage, and change the dynamic of the game. But, I mean, you talked about must-win for Houston. I guess this is a must-win, and I want to talk about it more based on the situation and the two teams necessarily involved. Cincinnati, back-to-back road wins at Houston, at New Orleans, but now they go into an unenviable spot of being a road favorite against the much-maligned Bucs team, who, according to their head coach, is very much in the thick of the playoff race at 2-9, given the inferiority complex throughout the NFC South. But, you know, how do we look at the Bengals? We've seen this number bet from 3, three with juice, all the way as high as 4, and the number has since come back as we record this podcast on Wednesday.
Yeah, I'm sure everybody will hear about those trends and how poor the Bucs are at home as a dog, but, you know, that is professional money on Tampa Bay grabbing the 4. There's no doubt about that. And we've seen one earlier instance with a team 3 games back-to-back-to-back on the road earlier this year when Peyton Manning and his Broncos went to the Rams and got as high as 10 points that week, and they lost outright by double digits. So it's not a favorable spot. We've seen slight decline in team's performance with just back-to-back road games. Now you're talking 3 in a row, and this is the spot for Tampa Bay. They haven't quit, and that was one thing. Despite losing last week, they were entrenched in that game emotionally. They were playing their toughest, and that's, again, what we've talked about this entire year. If you're going to back teams that are bad, which most professionals look to do because of inflated price tags, but if you can also get those inflated price tags with the emotional, mental effort, it looks like a good spot, and I think we'll get that here with Tampa Bay. When you talk about some of the weapons they have on offense, they have some weapons, so it'll be interesting to see what they do this week. Do they go back to Glennon? And if they do go back to Glennon, I think Tampa Bay is one of the better bets this week.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. And, oh, trends you mentioned. Tampa Bay, 6-21-1 against the spread the last 28 games as a home underdog. A little to say, Payne, you won't be financing your yacht had you backed the Bucs on those last 28. So you'll have to wait a little bit before you buy that estate in the Gulf of Mexico. We'll just put it that way.
Fortunately, if you bet them this weekend, you might be able to finance all that.
Yeah, so to say, every streak has to start somewhere, so maybe it starts this week with a win and cover against those Cincinnati Bengals. You talk about streaks and teams that have, I guess, struggled to try and find an identity. Fascinating game for me, AFC-NFC, Pittsburgh playing host to the New Orleans Saints. Pittsburgh, a 4.5-point favorite. Really can't imagine who wants to back the Saints when they take their show on the road, given what we saw over the last 3 games. What do we make of New Orleans? Still at 4-7, a $1.50 favorite to be NFC South champs and actually represent the division in the postseason.
You know, that's the question. What is New Orleans? And I think we keep leaning on that theory that they're still in the mix. And because they're still in the mix, I don't think that really means they're very good. If you were going to show up, it would have been on a Monday night game. It would have been a nationally televised game. It would have been in a spot where you do your dirt at home. Now you're facing a Pittsburgh team off a bye. I don't think Pittsburgh's very good either. You know, that's kind of the tough part in you know, addressing this game. I really think, though, and I know the market's starting to adjust, and some of these price tags on totals are getting inflated, sometimes too inflated. But at 53, if the weather looks decent, I think this is probably a decent spot to really look over this total.
Yeah, and I have to imagine if you're a prop player and you're looking for certain angles to take, Le'Veon Bell rushing yards, anything less than about $1.20 may make a lot of sense. Given all the success we saw of Justin Forsett running through gaping holes against that Saints defense. And I think that's become the bigger issue for New Orleans. And even if you watch them offensively, Jimmy Graham not making the plays in the passing game, some drops, and more importantly, not that valuable threat coming out of the backfield. There is no Darren Sproles type to bail Drew Brees out of a lot of these tough spots. So for two teams, though, you know, trying to figure out their identity, two teams who we kind of know exactly what they are, the marquee matchup of Sunday afternoon, New England on the road at Green Bay. You're looking at Green Bay, a 3-point favorite. You have to lay $1.20 right now with the Packers. Some flat 3 flats at recreational shops. One of the highest totals you're going to see this regular season, 58.5. Funny to think that the Patriots are Super Bowl favorites, yet will have been underdogs after Sunday in 3 of their last 4 games.
Yeah, we talked about this before, and I think this is a game where the sports books are going to need the favorite in a big way. We keep talking about it, Brady and Belichick as a dog. Bettors are running to them. And you know what? They've been cashing tickets, so you can't really blame them. But this is going to be a big game for the sports books. If you like Green Bay, I think you're probably on the right side. I really do. As well as New England's played, I think this is just a tough spot for them. I think Green Bay, what we've talked about, is how much they've improved on the defensive side of the ball. The safeties, the cornerbacks are back. They're healthy. The schemes they're running, they've added so many elements off their bye week with what they're doing with their defensive line. And I think that's really been the big improvement for this Green Bay team. We know what they're going to do offensively. And I think if you can lay the short price with Green Bay at -3, I think that's probably the way to look here.
Interesting thing to think about, too, if you look at lines and compare them. I can't speak for everyone, but I know I have Green Bay about 2.5 points better than the Colts, and yet I'm laying the exact same number with Green Bay at home in their own building as I had to lay on that Sunday night game with Indy, so maybe a little bit of value with the Packers by that particular token. And, of course, then the Sunday night game, which has taken on added relevance in the AFC West, a chance for Denver to kind of take a stranglehold over the division. You're looking at the Broncos as a 1.5-point favorite. Total in this game from 49 out to 49.5 when they go into very hostile territory to take on the Kansas City Chiefs in what should be an electric atmosphere at Arrowhead.
Yeah, Denver, you know, they did what they needed to do last week. It was pretty shocking. The ground game is really what's kind of hindered the offense a little bit, but they put up over 200 yards on the Dolphins with the third-string running back. So it was a big win. I think it took a lot out of Denver. I really do. They could be without the services of Tlaib, which would be a big loss on the defensive side of the ball. Kansas City, though, the last few years has had a tough time actually getting over that hump against Denver. I think this is probably a good spot to look. And again, one thing that we'll talk a lot about on this podcast is this is the week where it seems like people hate their family and they love to bet. So for whatever reason, tons of public money. It's a huge public money week. If you like your dogs, you're going to wait. If you like your dogs and you see professional money enter the market, rather than run and take a lesser number, be patient. It probably will come back. We have seen favorites and overs just take so much money from the public this week. They're just so involved. And again, I think we'll see it with Denver. God forbid this game goes to 3. You're going to see professionals all over Kansas City, and I think you'll see professionals on Kansas City anyways.
Some interesting trends in this game to keep in mind as well. The Broncos actually 10-0 straight up their last 10 road games versus AFC West opponents. They've got 9-1 against the spread during that span. Kansas City, on the other side, has struggled against the division, 6-15 against the number their last 21 home games. And rather than taking a negative approach to people hating their families, pain, I'm going to go the other way and say maybe they just love their family too much that they overspent on Black Friday, and that's why they need to try and gamble to try and make that money back.
There you go. That's quite the mindset and approach there, huh?
You know, trying to go glass half full. You know, New Year's resolutions are right around the corner, so I'm jotting things down on my notepad in front of me for things that
positivity.
I can adhere to when the calendar flips to 2015. The gentleman on that end of the line as we look to reset, Payne Insider. You can follow him on Twitter, at Payne Insider, or visit his website at PayneInsider.com. I'm Todd Furman. Check out my work at toddstake.com. And Payne, before we get to the trio of Thanksgiving treats, let's go to the Ask the Bet the Board hashtag, which people can use throughout the course of the week. We always go back. We'll try and find some of the best questions that are out there. Even if we can't get to them that particular week, it doesn't mean we won't follow it up later. And this one is actually a question that was asked back on November 13th from Jonathan, and I apologize in advance if I butcher his last name. Karabowitz goes by the Twitter handle, at SPRYTASTIK. I'm going to go with Sprytastic as the shorthand for it. What causes a line to move from 3 to 2.5 versus a line that will actually stay the same but with higher juice? A relevant question, especially when we're going to address the Cowboys-Eagles game in just a matter of minutes.
It's actually a very, very good question, and I would say, you know, you've worked behind the counter, and we've seen this, a couple examples of this in big games this year, and the biggest word that would come to my mind is protection, and we've seen it on a Monday Night Football game earlier this year with the Houston Texans and Pittsburgh Steelers. We also saw it this past Monday with the Ravens and Saints. And we've seen professional money come in on both the home dogs in those spots where it's opened in that 4, 3.5 range. We've seen huge professional money, but we know that's not the public side. The public's going to be opposite. Now, some sports books have gone all the way through that key number of 2.5, and we've seen other sports books like the Greek, like the Westgate LVH, very hesitant where they're going to keep the three but attach juice, and it's simply because it's a huge game. There will be lots of handle. It's a big liability game. The last thing they want is the public winning, laying 2.5, and the professionals winning, taking the 3.5 and the 4 from earlier in the week. So it's a protection tool. And I think, Todd, you've been behind the counter. What do you think of that and kind of the efforts you guys go to not typically going to the 2.5?
Well, I think it's a fundamental philosophy, and depending on which bookmakers you'll talk to, the South Point is a book that refuses to use juice. They'd rather go to 3.5 or 2.5 than attaching juice to that price. But I think you have to go in knowing that this is the way you're going to approach your NFL numbers, not just for one particular standalone game, but for the course of the full season. As you know, Payne, juice is the number one deterrent for a lot of professional bettors. You have to really like a position if you're going to talk about laying a dollar and $1.25, $1.30, and have to think that there is a lot of value there. But also from a Vegas perspective, more so than offshore, there are still a number of books that don't let you buy on or off of a three. And so by doing this, you're allowing people, you're forcing them to create a decision here by taking the three and having to lay a price if they want to take a dog, or in the case of the Eagles-Cowboys game, you know, -3, -$1.25, more so than going to 3.5, where you will have that option to buy to 4. Some of that is as simplistic as saying ticket writers just don't grasp that you shouldn't be allowing players to buy on or off the 3 or even from 3.5 to 4. So there are a number of factors in play that'll create that type of situation. And it's why we always encourage people, whether you bet primarily just in Vegas or you're playing offshore, always have a variety of options to shop around so you can buy on or off of key numbers as needed to try and create some of that value.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. And I think just in general, you should have multiple sports books because they cater to so many different types of clientele. Some cater to sharp guys, some cater to the recreational bettor, and you'll always have line discrepancies. And anytime you go to the window, you want to have the best number in your back pocket.
That is for sure. And Payne, I know we don't get to personal questions, so to speak, all that regularly, but EMC, who goes by the Twitter handle @_real_cho, asked us, favorite Thanksgiving or a holiday cocktail? I'll let you lead off there, because from what I've heard, you're a man known to do damage on the Christmas party circuit down there in South Florida and wake up in the morning with a lampshade on your head.
I don't think I'll be going out tonight on the biggest party night of the year. That'll be surprising.
Hey, you're in your late 20s. And you're in your late 20s, too. You should be relishing the opportunity. Me being an old man over the hill in his early 30s, realize it's amateur hour on the Wednesday night before Thanksgiving.
I actually just turned the big 3-0 recently, so I'm maturing with age very nicely. But the big thing for me is no matter the time of year or the day, I keep it clear, it's always vodka. So that's me. It doesn't matter the holiday. It doesn't matter the day. It's always vodka.
A man of simple taste, I'll say that I've grown fond of eggnog in the past, so a little bit unusual given my Jewish roots, but it beats Manischewitz, that's for damn sure. And I will say that come the morning when it gets a little cold, even out in the desert, nothing beats a Bailey's and coffee to try and jumpstart your day the right way.
That's not bad.
You got to think outside the box. I mean, you're a Vegas veteran. You know what it takes. Let's like to try and take that edge off. But I figured have you peg more as a Bloody Mary fan, which you know might be in store if you were on the West Coast for the early morning kickoff between the Bears and Lions, who get things going at 9:30 Pacific time, 12:30 on the East Coast. Detroit, we'll call them a 7-point favorite now, total of 47. You know, Payne, what do we do with these two teams as Detroit started to look like, well, the Lions of old, and the Bears continue to flounder despite being on a 2-game winning streak?
This is really a tough game. We have seen some early money on Detroit. You're now looking at 7 across the board, but the question mark is when you always see money enter the market is what is the intention? And so we might have seen some early sharp money on Detroit, but what's the intention? Obviously, when you're around those key numbers, it's to get the best of it, and I wouldn't be shocked if we see some sharp money enter the market on Chicago. When you talk about this Detroit team, aside from last year beating the Packers, they've been miserable in this Thanksgiving Day game. And when you talk about where this team's headed, what is the deal with Matthew Stafford? Is this a guy you can rely on? We know how poor he is on the road. The numbers have floated around. He's yet to win a road game against a team with an above 500 record. But when you look at this guy in terms of what he is this year, he's been horrific. His quarterback rating is horrible. And when you talk about that quarterback rating, there's guys this year, and we're going to mention those names, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Kirk Cousins, Austin Davis, Mike Glennon, those guys have all been benched, and they have better passer ratings than Matthew Stafford. So that's the question mark here is, what are you going to get from these two quarterbacks that are Jekyll and Hyde? So that'll be the interesting factor. But I think we'll see some sharp money coming on the Bears.
I call it a hunch, but none of those quarterbacks that you mentioned make Matthew Stafford-type paychecks. So I have to imagine Stafford will continue to man the pivot for the Lions. And you talked about it. We did have some questions, too, come up on Thanksgiving Day trends. Of course, these are more for entertainment than anything else in terms of advocating a play. The Lions have now covered back-to-back Thanksgiving Day games after failing to cover their previous eight. So you have to see if things have turned the right way. And, of course, the Lions have actually been on a nice little run in divisional home games, 5-0 against the spread. Picking up a couple covers earlier this season as well. You look at another big divisional game, two teams that maybe early in the year we thought were going to go in different directions, Philadelphia and Dallas. We'll call Dallas a three-point favorite, but you obviously have to lay a price. Minus $1.25, more or less, a consensus from where this game opened at three. Seen some money on the over as well, no surprise. 54 out to 55, even some 55.5 starting to pop in the market. Can Dallas take that short week and bring their A game against Philadelphia at home on Thursday?
This side's really tough for me to gauge because you ask yourself the question, what could bookmakers actually make this line? And they have to make it three and let the market dictate where it goes from there. We saw earlier in the day Dallas get out to 3.5, and it didn't last very long. We saw some professional money just grab the hook there with Philadelphia. And when you talk about this short week, the question mark becomes, you know, who do you want game planning here on this short week? Jason Garrett or Chip Kelly?
My answer is Chip Kelly. My answer is Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly is worth 3 points on a short week compared to Jason Garrett.
And so, and we already know Dallas doesn't have a huge home field advantage, obviously a little more this year because the team is better. We have seen professional money come in on this over 54. I don't believe that we've seen a huge adjustment in the market with this total. When you talk about, they used 54 last year in this game. So I don't think there's a ton of inflation on that. The question mark here becomes, I think this total has a lot of variance. We've seen Philadelphia this year. They've been fantastic defensively in the red zone. If you can't score touchdowns, you're not going over. Dallas, it's going to sound crazy, but having them run the ball effectively is beneficial to an under in this game. So if they're able to run it effectively, I think it's going to stay under the total. And then the question mark that we've talked about a lot is, where does this line go from here? And we've talked about it is, with the public, Thanksgiving week, is this total going to continue to climb? And I think that's the case. So was the initial move by professionals simply to get this total on the run and potentially come back in under a kick? I'm not 100% certain, but it always leaves them with options. For me, though, at 3.5, if it becomes widely available, I like the Philadelphia side here. I really do.
Yeah, I think that's probably the angle that I would look to take. Don't obviously love Mark Sanchez and what he brings to the table, or the comments that Philadelphia's players have made talking about how Dallas's offensive line wasn't all that dominant, more an indictment of the Giants' inability to put pressure on the quarterback. Not really sure that that is the best thing you want to say, but in a key divisional game, I think you're exactly right. Bookmakers were put in a bit of a tough spot to try and figure out exactly what number that they were going to hang at three. It's funny to think about all the comments though being made about Dallas' defense, about how they're vastly improved. Still ranked 26th in the NFL in terms of yards per play allowed, but when DeMarco Murray's out there churning out the clock, limiting possessions for the opposition, it makes Dallas as a unit look a heck of a lot better. And then, of course, the nightcap, Seattle and San Francisco, a key divisional game to decide which one of these teams has a bit of an inside track for the wild card or maybe even catch Arizona in the division in the NFC West. San Francisco, open two, number was bet down to pick, and we see 1.5 start to pop again. Also a little bit of money on the under from 41 down to 39.5. You and I both thought Seattle was in a great spot last week, not only as a straight play, obviously, but as a teaser wheel, and they definitely didn't disappoint. Now, what do we make of the 49ers in terms of their identity? Clearly weren't exactly dynamic offensively in their 17-13 win against the Redskins.
This is a really tough game because it's two teams that everybody's wanted to just bury out in the desert for dead. And you're looking at two teams, 7-4. One of these guys is going to escape at 8-4. So they haven't been totally horrible despite not looking, you know, impressive like we thought both teams would coming into the season. For me here, though, I think San Francisco really looked last year at an opportunity blown. They went into Seattle. They dominated Seattle. They had a couple of calls go against them, obviously the one with Navarro Bowman at the goal line. And I think this is a game that San Francisco is going to rally around. I like San Francisco in this spot here. We've seen it creep up just a touch earlier today. So I think San Francisco is your side here. The total, we have seen money come in on the under. I think there'll be some opposition here going over now at the 39 mark. It'll be interesting to see where this total closes. It's a really, really tight total, and it makes a lot of sense. Seattle's just had struggles offensively. The way they're now game planning, it's really getting back to the ground. We saw them struggle in the red zone again last week against Arizona. So I think points will be at a premium here, but I think San Francisco is the side. I think they do enough to get the W here.
And I think there's a trend, too, that bears watching. And I know a lot of times trends, there's noise, and you can always make a case for any particular situation. But in the 8 non-Detroit, non-Dallas Thanksgiving Day games, we've seen home teams compile a 7-1 straight-up record. I think a lot of that speaks to the short week benefiting teams and just rallying around that opportunity to be on that national spotlight on such a marquee day that don't always have that opportunity, unlike what we've seen in the past. So I would agree with you there, Payne. And I know before we close this podcast out and wish everyone a very happy Thanksgiving, we've been called a lot of things through social media, wishy-washy, Switzerland, you name it, over the course of the few weeks picking games. So for Thanksgiving, I'm thinking that you and I offer of sides and totals of those three games. Is there an angle that you think is most compelling at this point? I'll say San Francisco for me, laying the short price at -1 makes the most sense if you're betting one game on tomorrow for the holiday.
That's a match, baby. Matches are good, I hear. I think San Francisco is the right side. I think that's probably your most. Yeah, I think it's probably got the largest edge for that game Thursday. We talked about Philadelphia. If it gets to 3.5, that would be a decent look. It's not there right now, so I wouldn't be running to jump in there. This is the NFL podcast, but I actually think, as crazy as it sounds, the best bet is actually in college football tomorrow. If you want to dime out that gem for the listeners.
Oh, I thought you take it. I mean, it's a game that you've had circled for a couple weeks. I know you and the troops are circling the wagons to try and make a play in the Lone Star Showdown tomorrow evening.
Longhorns, baby. Longhorns +7. I think that's probably the best bet of the entire day, NFL or college football. So I think Texas Longhorns get it done. I know we made this number 2.5, and I think the Longhorns are probably the best bet. I know this is the NFL podcast, but it is Thanksgiving, and I like to talk Texas Longhorns, and I think they have a great shot to win that game outright.
Well, I mean, it is the Bet the Board podcast. We came up with a name that was ubiquitous and allow us to go across sports, and yes, I mean, I can spell that word for you so you can look up its true definition when we wrap up the podcast. But always a pleasure, buddy, trying to catch up, and I want to take this opportunity to thank all the loyal listeners who have been with us so far, whether this is your 20th podcast for Bet the Board or it's the first time you listen to us. Have a happy and healthy Thanksgiving. Best of luck with all your wagers, and make sure you spend some quality time with your family, hopefully with a few winning tickets in your pocket. And Payne, any words of wisdom before going into Sunday and we reconvene on Monday to break down that high-profile game between the Dolphins and Jets?
Nothing too crazy, but a big thanks. Each and every week, this podcast continues to grow. Last week, we eclipsed the largest number of listens that we've had to date, so we appreciate that, and keep tuning in.
Yeah, you, the listener, guys, this is what we do it for, so continue to keep offering feedback, good, bad, or otherwise, and use the hashtag AskBetTheBoard. We'll be happy to get to a lot of those questions for next Thursday's edition, but in the meantime, best of luck this weekend, and enjoy the holiday, and we'll be right back with you on Monday to preview the Monday Night Football game and talk about what we learned from the week that was in the NFL, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.